Tom and Leah are the Watchers.
Before we start properly, this is the voice I give to get those levels.
That's actually Tom's normal voice, isn't it?
Oh, my normal voice is more down here. It's a lot of effort. I have to squeeze my throat to get the normal voice.
He's the Barry White of Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to We Are The Watchers, episode 19. Tom, how are you?
I'm top notch.
You've had a big weekend.
I had a big weekend.
We will find out more about that in a moment.
Everyone, just adjust your chairs, sit on
get
the front
ready,
third. That's
bait
all
a
you
breath.
Need.
It's just that I don't want Linz to sit there in silence whilst you tell a story without me introducing you. Linz, how are you?
I'm well.
Hi,
thanks.
Special guest.
Oh.
Welcome back to the podcast. Well, this one. Obviously, you have your own name of...
The Jewelers Podcast.
It's a great one. Going gangbusters as well.
Yeah, sure. It's an industry podcast, so it's very niche. Got a good little community.
Which is good.
Hanging out with each other.
Now, I need to know more about this weekend of Tom's.
Sure. I went to Melbourne. I know. Oh, you want me to extrapolate further? Okay, yeah. On Saturday, we've talked about it before, I went to Download Festival, which was the big metal festival held at Flemington Racecourse. And it went that well. They've announced this morning that it'll be back next year and Sydney as well.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Now, of course, you've got the question of, are you just going to do the Sydney one or are you still going to do the Melbourne trip down?
We'll see how things play out, but okay. The Melbourne setup was really good.
Where was it in Melbourne?
So it was out at Flemington Racecourse.
Right.
Which, 10-15 minute tram ride.
Easy to get to then.
Yes.
Although a lot of stuff in Melbourne's super easy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got that nice grid system.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Easy to get around, a lot of good public transport. Saw some good bands, drank some beers.
Who did you see?
Highlight, I saw Prophets of Rage, which were great. They played a few of their own songs, but mostly it was covers of Rage Against the Machine, Cypress Hill, Public Enemy, and even a little bit of Audioslave thrown in.
Audioslave?
Yeah, they did a lovely tribute to Chris Cornell, turned the microphone around towards the crowd and let us sing during Like a Stone.
Did you get those little tingles in the back of your neck?
Not many dry eyes in the house.
Yeah, I bet. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, Limp Bizkit, Fred Durst is real old, pretty fat, has a grey beard, and obviously does not do this as a job too often.
So he's rolling in a different way.
Yes. He's far more gentle in terms of breaking stuff. He's more worried about breaking his back, I think, because he spent a lot of time crouched down.
Why didn't he just get a seat? Just sit on a stool, perch
well,
yourself.
Well, it's funny you say that because there was a point. Now, obviously, Limp Bizkit would be quite concerned about crowd behaviour because of what happened last time. Oh, you know, last time they played a big festival here, girl got crushed in the mosh pit. There was one incident where Fred stopped everyone playing. Guys, looks like someone's down in the pit there. Get him up. Mm-hmm. No, all of you turn around. Get that guy up. Oh, that guy's in a wheelchair.
Oh, no.
Classic Kanye.
Well, he was still like, no, get him up. Put him up on top, bringing him up here.
Nice save.
So the guy in a wheelchair was crowd surfing.
Oh, that's actually...
It was pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. So my memory of Limp Bizkit is that Fred, to me, felt old back then.
Yeah, they were at least late 30s, if not... mid-30s-ish, somewhere around there. Their DJ, DJ Lethal, was actually in House of Pain before that.
Oh, right.
Yes. So he was looking older.
He's still hanging around Christina Aguilera, though, when she was like in her early 20s, I think. Old Fred.
He wanted to find the genie in a bottle.
Yeah, that's right. She was a little dirty, too, if you remember.
Korn looked like they haven't washed since they were big in the early 2000s.
Since the Woodstock extravaganza of 99 or whenever it was.
Oh, yeah. There must have been a band meeting at some point of let's look dirty. And then every 6 months they check in. You still dirty? Good. We're still dirty.
Were they good?
They were pretty good. They were pretty heavy. Look, it very much made me realize I'm not an angsty teenager anymore.
Okay, yeah.
That music is of a certain time of my life.
Yeah, fair enough.
But Suicidal Tendencies and NOFX both brought some serious punk action to the table. NOFX were pretty much picking fights with every other band there.
What, just in their banter, on-stage banter?
Well, they were on at the same time as Korn, and Korn were on the big stage very loud, and their sound was bleeding through a bit. So they're like, in between songs, they're like, Korn, it's not a competition, all right? You guys won. Turn it down.
I'm trying to think the last concert I went to definitely wasn't Korn. Do you remember yours, Linz?
Oh, I went to see Queen with Adam Lambert a month or two ago.
How were they? And
yeah, it was amazing. It was really good. Adam Lambert is good.
So he was, is he an Idol or an X Factor?
He's an Idol. And when he came out and he said, look, let's say what we're all thinking, I'm not Freddie. No shit.
So he didn't try and emulate him?
No. He did his own thing. He was camp in a different way. Mm. He was a bit more musical theatre than opera, the way Freddie went sort of thing. And and he was just like, look, I've got the best seat in the house. So let's get on with it.
I remember
get
a few years ago I went to see the Sydney Symphony Orchestra at the Opera House do Queen songs, and they had four guest vocalists. It was so much fun. That the group who I went with are now planning on organising when they do Star Wars again. I think they're going to do Empire Strikes Back soundtrack.
Sure.
I'm going to that.
That nice. Sounds cool, yeah.
Really fun. Still can't remember the last concert I went to.
Must have been good.
It must have been amazing. I remember going to the disaster that was Madonna's concert.
Ooh.
Yeah, falling over or kissing young men or
muscly arms.
Like 2.5 hours late.
Oh, really? One of them?
Yeah. Thought she was really cool. Kept swearing. Everyone's like,
Behave, Grandma.
Super underwhelming and super disappointing.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, we've got a lot to get through. We've done a lot of watching. I know, Tom, you've done an awful lot of watching.
I
don't know how. He's been away.
He's the Watchers.
I packed in a lot.
Capital T, capital W.
I did one thing that was watching but not really watching. It was interacting.
I don't even know how that goes. Can you explain more?
Sure. So also in Melbourne, there's a thing on at the moment called the Avengers Station, or STATION, which sounds like TURTLE power. But it's a pop-up immersive experience. It's a co-venture with STEM, which is Science, Technology, Engineering and Mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the science behind the superheroes. And, yeah, it was very cool. I got to try and pick up Thor's hammer.
Any luck?
No. Damn. I was not worthy as much as I wanted to be.
Didn't you get in trouble as well?
I did, because it was on this slanted thing, and I stood up there and I put my feet on the slant so I could like really lean back and give it my all. And the guy's like, hey, you got to keep your feet on the floor. I'm like, I'm not going to be picking it up like that.
Where are the rules?
It's not like there's rules printed on the stone where Excalibur is.
No, I've not seen that when I've gone there a few times to test. Yes, I still can't.
Download the manual on the internet. Right.
Yeah, but there was a bit of that. I held Cap's shield. There was a lot of science. There was actually a very interesting part about you could manipulate stuff on how Bruce Banner's brain changes when he turns into the Hulk, and the different elements of his brain expand or shrink, and that's what leads to the increased anger, durability and this sort of stuff.
Oh,
this is in depth.
A psychological breakdown of the Hulk.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, this stuff went really, really all out.
That's super impressive.
Yes.
Was it packed?
Look, they run every hour on the hour. You can go in, and it takes 45 minutes to an hour to go through.
It's all right.
And, yeah, you go through in tour groups and stuff like that. The part that was particularly interesting was there was a whole room based just around the Infinity Stones, which are going to be very important in the upcoming Infinity War. And there was some slight teasers as to where the location of the Soul Stone might be, which is the one we still don't know, but we discussed.
Now, we don't need to go into detail as to where you think it is, but were they guessing where you thought it was?
They weren't saying specifics.
Ah, okay.
They were just putting the mystery out there, get you thinking about it.
Really quick side note.
Yeah.
I watched Doctor Strange.
Ooh. Did you enjoy it?
Last weekend. Yeah, it was good fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really had a lot of fun watching it. When the world goes everywhere.
Yeah.
It was a bit of Inception.
Okay.
Remember when Inception, the city rolled up onto itself?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that, but yeah, a bit of that was going on. I'm like, whoa.
They had some pretty cool Facebook ads that you scrolled down and it looked like a post, but then it folded out into like a video and it was like, what's going on?
How did they do that?
Clever. Magic.
Clever minds.
Magic.
It was superhero magic. That's exactly what it was.
I'm very excited by one moment in the Infinity War trailer where Doctor Strange is throwing magic platforms for Star-Lord to run across while he shoots his guns.
This is going to be an exciting movie.
It's going to be a mashup.
So much hype, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when a movie gets that hyped, can it ever live up to it?
I hope so.
Building up to a bit of a crescendo, isn't it?
Yes. Look, I think if this was part four and all the hype, I might be nervous, but the fact that this is a part three and there's another one coming next year gives me a lot of hope of, okay, they're going to leave some stuff open. We don't need everything answered in this one film.
It's always nice to have a bit more, where as soon as you walk out of the movie, just to start already planning what you think's going to happen in the next one, the follower. What else have you been watching?
All right, so a couple of things. There was a trailer for a new film called Zoo, which is it's set during the war in Belfast Zoo. There's a young guy, I'm talking maybe 12, 13, somewhere around like that. His dad is the elephant keeper and enlists to go to war, so this guy's put in charge of the elephants, and a new baby elephant arrived pretty much at the same time that the government orders all the animals destroyed. They're worried about bombing, releasing all the animals into Belfast.
Right.
So this kid and his friends break the baby elephant out of the zoo and start hiding it in all of their garages.
Aww.
That's cute.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be far more drama than comedy.
It's going to get you in the feels, I think.
It does sound cute, but the actual sort of logistics.
Yeah, the mechanics of that are not good. I think you'd last 3 days of trying to feed it before all the hay in the village is gone.
Like the tiger who came to tea.
Yes.
The elephant that stayed in the garage.
So that, I think that looks really strong, a lot of good potential. I was very excited. And Practical Jokers, we've talked plenty about before.
One of your favourites.
It is one of my favourites.
Have you watched any of it, Linz?
So Tom loves it. I'm indifferent, and he likes to show me segments. I did watch.
Yeah, I pull out highlight segments. This week, they've been hyping up The Punishment for quite a while. One of the guys has to be an assistant salts teacher, and while he's teaching the class has to... indecent proposal every couple in the room.
Okay.
And it's as soul-destroying as you would imagine to have to walk around and meet happy couples, many of them practicing for their wedding, and basically go, I've got a briefcase of money. Can I sleep with one of yous?
Doesn't matter which one.
But it's a good exercise. We were talking about this last night, a good exercise in bravery. Like, you know, if you're starting in the industry and you're, like, looking to network and stuff, if you pretend to be a salsa teacher and indecently propose to all the couples, not that we're necessarily recommending it,
no.
But... it would be a good exercise in bravery.
Yes, you wouldn't get afraid of much.
Yeah. If you can do that, you can do anything.
But yes, the other reason they've been hyping it so much is because straight after the show they announced that they're making a movie. And I imagine it's going to be something along the lines of Jackass, of skits stitched together with a narrative. Nothing's
okay.
Known yet. I believe Chris Henchy is going to direct it, who... he's been a writer on a lot of Adam McKay films, like the other guys and this sort of stuff. So strong potential there.
Feeling confident about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And look, I'll flip over to you in a moment, but I'll quickly say I watched some animated shows.
Oh.
Some new ones.
I thought you were going to say anime for a second there.
No, never.
Okay.
Only by mistake. So Adam Ruins Everything is something I've talked about on the podcast before.
Yes.
Their new season has started and it's a change of format. It's an entirely animated series.
Is that, I mean, why? Did they go into why?
Well, they had the animations in between.
Yeah, they've done lots of stings and animated stills and clips and stuff between it before. This one is specifically historically focused, so it's all about going and addressing periods of history. So rather than having to invest tons of funds into recreating in live action, they can have a lot more fun with this sort of stuff. And I think it's also given him a bit more budget because he's got a co-host now, which is Chris Parnell.
Yeah,
from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
And his wonderful deep baritone matches really well with Adam's nerdy higher voice. They have wonderful arguments.
It's actually a good mix.
Yeah, it works really well. So the first one was all about Paul Revere and moments from the Civil War. And it looks like there's going to be ones on Egypt and perhaps even one on Shakespeare.
Oh, I love Egypt. I still love Egypt, ancient Egypt. When I was at school, I was, give me more of that. And even to this day, I would still love to go.
Sure. Yeah. I was a Greek.
Are you a Greek?
History girl.
Sparta or Athens or both?
Oh, I don't actually know that much.
You're like, I'll just
this
grab
the
whole
lot. This is when I was
lot.
Eight.
Yeah.
Give me a bit of Aztecs like and Incas.
Oh, really?
That's my scene. Yeah, I like a square pyramid. you know, sun gods, but not Osiris, Jaguar. You know, yeah. I'm very interested in my werewolves.
Were Jaguars. Yep.
Yeah, give me that South African lore. Good stuff.
South Africa?
Sorry, South America. I'm too excited because I'm thinking about my next one I'm going to talk about.
I just didn't want a correction to come in, that's all.
That's all right. You won't believe the next show I watched.
Yes.
The new version of Muppet Babies.
Yeah. It's back? I remember that as a kid.
Well, it's come back and now it's even more for little kids. It's been brought back by Disney Junior, so it's squarely aimed at what I would say is maybe five and under, somewhere around there. So it was a block of two episodes. I just watched the one.
That was enough. You only needed a feel.
That's right. My daughter's a little bit too old for it now. I mean, she might still enjoy it, but it's very much aimed similar to a Doc McStuffins or
that sort of thing. So it's not like that. Is it the Tiny Toons?
No. So that was Spielberg. Called? Yeah.
Is that Tiny Toons?
Yeah, Tiny Toons. That was Spielberg.
Looney Tunes one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That was a spin-off of Animaniacs, I believe.
That was a bit older, wasn't it?
Yes, and had a bit of older jokes and was aimed more at the 10 to 12-year-old preteen market.
Yeah.
Where this one is very squarely aimed at the kids. And there's a new penguin Muppet that doesn't seem to fit quite with the rest, but, you know, that's...
Maybe that's part of the story.
Well, this one looks more like a toy, and that's why I say it ties more to your Doc McStuffins and those sorts of ones where it's a toy come to life. I think to very little children that don't have the context of the Muppet movies and stuff like that, because it's not as relevant anymore, having a toy-looking one in with them maybe helps understanding there.
But was it, like, because there's some children's TV shows you watch for, you know, your 0 to 5s, and, like, Thomas the Tank Engine, he gets a bit annoying sometimes. And
what, as a kid or as an adult?
Mike the Knight, no one likes him. Like, are they likable characters as an adult?
I think the fact that I watched one of two episodes I'd already downloaded, and that was enough.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we'll leave it there. So it's not bad at all. If you've got little kids, I recommend checking it out and see if they get involved with it. It's nice to see the Muppet Babies back. It does have a redone version of the theme song.
But are the Muppet Babies themselves?
So it's Kermit, Piggy, Gonzo, Animal, Fozzie.
They still look like they used to?
But, well, it's more CGI style.
Ah, right, okay.
Who's your favourite?
I always liked Kermit. He was always my favourite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had a Kermit. Yeah. Yeah, he got to sit with the other stuffed toys that I had. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Fozzie.
Yeah, Fozzie. He's
a bit of a space cadet like me, yeah.
Yeah. Tom? You?
Gonzo. Was there any of it? Of course it was going to be that.
Why did we ask?
Yeah.
In a world that Tom forgot, we are the Watchers.
Just really quickly, I saw that George R.R. Martin's Night Flyers has got a, what would you call it, trailer coming out.
Sure.
Except I couldn't watch it. It said I wasn't allowed to watch it because I'm not in the correct country, which is a bit disappointing.
Classic Australia.
I know, exactly. Stay Night tuned. Flyers, exactly. It's based on his 1980 novella. So I don't know why I was reading a Vice article and they were trying to compare it to Game of Thrones. It's like, it's a science fiction show. How much can you compare it to? And they basically came to the conclusion, it's not like Game of Thrones, except lots of people die. Okay, that's fair enough. But one to look out for.
I guess that could, for some people, that means high budget, violent, perhaps some nudity.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah, it's more about the status than the themes.
Prestige television.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly.
What else have you been watching?
I went and saw the Tomb Raider movie.
Oh, how was it?
Yeah, the new one. I liked it. Ooh. I've always been a fan of Tomb Raider, though. Mm-hmm. Lara Croft, I remember playing I finished the first few games, actually. Took me a long time. And when I say me, I mean me and my sister, because we couldn't do it alone. The older games were really hard. There were so many different sort of puzzles and...
Yeah.
The levels were not sort of, you do not hear Lara in the original games going, maybe if I walk over there, I'll find the way out, which is what newer games like Uncharted and Tomb Raider and Horizon, even Zero Dawn, did that as well. But yeah, the movie took a while to set up, which was a little bit annoying as someone who used to play the games, and I've played the latest ones as well, because the games are all about action and problem solving in those tombs. and there was sure. that, but there was just the setup, and I, obviously the setup was a compromise
yep.
between the people who knew Lara and the producers who went, we need to give people backgrounds. But I liked it. It was new. It was gritty. She was a proper Lara, as in the Lara that we know in the new games.
Yep.
She's younger. It's almost it's like a prequel, could we call it that?
Sure.
A little bit.
Well, the first game, the Rise of the Tomb Raider, that was very much felt like a prequel because that was her learning prequel. The abilities and yeah. learning how to survive on an island and stuff like that. So.
Which I understand why I found that easy to accept
yep.
and why you would, Tom, if you went and saw it as well. But people, I heard a few reviewers, film reviewers, trying to compare it to the old Angelina Jolie movies. And
they weren't good.
They weren't good, and also that's not what Lara is anymore.
No.
And
that wasn't really what she was at the time either. That was a very, very loose interpretation of what the games had been.
I did see that your mate Hex, Steph,
yes.
Has had a bit of a reflection about the Tomb Raider movie, and she said that the more she thinks about it, the more she enjoys it and had enjoyed it. So if you've sort of been put off a little bit by the mixed reviews, go and watch it for yourself. I went and watched it with my sister. We did the bonding. Remember we used to love Lara and Tomb Raider? And she went away saying, that was so much fun. She said, I got really stressed out in some bits when the action was a bit full on. She said, I knew, you know, Lara's going to be okay because she's the main character.
Yeah.
But even though the stakes perhaps were not there, it was still exciting to see how she was going to get out of interesting little conundrums. But good movie, good fun. If you want to go and see it at the movies, definitely go and do that. Or if you want to wait till it's on Netflix or something, totally worth it as well.
Nice podcast. They make them for men.
What else have you guys been watching?
So we watched One Strange Rock last night.
Now, what's this one about?
So it is Will Smith narrating life, well, not life on Earth, but Earth itself.
Yeah.
And
it's directed by Darren Aronofsky.
This is one that you mentioned and you were hyped about a few weeks ago. So it's out.
It's a super big budget documentary series. I think it's going to be 10 episodes mm-hmm. and each are on a topic that you wouldn't normally see one of these ones. So this episode was called Gasp, and it's entirely about how air is produced and how all these different elements, like the other elements, are necessary to produce air.
Yeah. So a lot of the time when we talk about evolution, we always talk about the first bacteria. Turning into a fish, turning into or whatever.
But I've got Fatboy Slim in my head now, right?
But this one, it was like the pre-evolution part of Earth that you didn't know, that you haven't, you knew was there, but you'd never thought to think about.
Because we've never been taught, or even, maybe, think I've ever had that.
Look, we were discussing it after we watched it, and the best way I could describe how this episode went was it was kind of like a game of three card Monty, which is that game that hustlers play, where they have the three cards and they, you know, there's two tens and a jack, or two tens and a queen, and
they
you've got to
shuffle it around.
You've got to trace it. And those first few times when they flip it over and you put some money down, so you keep playing, they let you win and stuff like that. But then when it's time to actually play the game properly, they keep pulling the answer away from you. And that's what this show did. It'd talk about how, you know, these are the salt flats here in Africa, and it's really important that for these tribes because they mine salt. But that's actually not why we're talking about it, because when that salt's been mined, it creates dust clouds that can be seen from space, and that dust actually travels over the Amazon. And that's the perfect fertilizer for the Amazon River.
And then they start talking about the Amazon.
And then they talk about the Amazon and the way it produces more than a quarter of the oxygen produced in the world. But it uses every single last drop of it. But when it's used that oxygen up, the air drifts towards the Andes and creates water that then makes the sediment go down the river into the ocean and feeds bacteria that actually creates most of the oxygen that we're using. And it just kept going with this. It was film style narrative storytelling.
But so that was the interesting part about it is that it was, I watched a lot of documentaries and this was made by a film director with a film star hosting and narrating. So it was, I don't know if it's been done much before, like this kind of hybrid film, TV series, with a sort of storyline.
The closest that I could relate to was Cosmos, which still didn't go quite to this level. It was very earnest, and part of why Will Smith works so well is he has such an authoritative voice. You believe him, but he's so energetic and enthusiastic about it. It's like, dude, I got something to tell you that's going to blow your mind.
he's had some lessons in pace and stuff.
It's like he's talking at a very much, you know, a slower pace than usual.
So he's not Fresh Prince singing.
No, not at all. But there are moments of him being filmed outside the studio, so it's not just him coming in for a day's work once a week, that sort of thing. Mm. But it's, you know, it's just him talking straight into the camera, and he's like, guys, like, his smile is infectious, and he's just so, he's so happy to be telling you this stuff in a way that you knew plenty of this stuff, but you, no one's ever taught you how that impacted this, and without that, this can't happen, and this sort of stuff. Yeah. So it's just this masterful intertwining story of how the planet works. Plenty of these facts you know from school, but just no one ever thought to take it to that level above of why you need this to happen for this to happen so this can happen so you can breathe.
So yeah. would you say that this is a doco series that is perfect for adults, but perhaps you could watch it as a family? I mean, how young a child would find it engaging?
I think our 5-year-old's probably a bit young, but I would save it for when she's a little bit older.
I can, like, this is going to be
DVD series.
This is going to be every high school science teacher's favorite show ever, because this is just going to be the rainy day fodder.
Yeah,
there were parts, as someone who's more on the documentary side than the film side, that I felt were a bit drawn out, a little bit overproduced. But that's the bridging of the audiences, I guess.
Yeah, like, that's true. And was it noticeable, or were you sort of trying to analyse it a little bit?
It was the build up to some scenes where it was a little bit like, oh, come on.
Yeah, look, the other thread through this episode is 8 different astronauts who spent a great deal of time in space talking about how we, who have never left the Earth, can never appreciate Earth the way they do. And they can see, when you're that far up, all the macro interactions. So they can see that dust cloud lift up off Africa.
Right.
They do the rotation of the Earth, that dust cloud's across the ocean. They do another rotation, then they can see it landing in South America, this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So they had this wonderful different perspective. And one of the stories is about one of the astronauts who got stuff in his eyes while he was outside the space station and had to
Sorry.
He had to go through some pretty hectic stuff in order to try and clear his eyes out and not die.
Wow.
Yes. And it involves air. It boils down to that idea of gasp. And this was, you know, the story gets set up in the first third. And I'm with Linz. At first, it felt like this is very dramatic. This music's very serious and this sort of stuff. But as the show went on, it earned that. I felt like it validated that sort of choice that it's made with building suspense and tension.
So they're bringing a different episode out each week? Or can you sort of binge it all?
No, it's 1 a week. It's Natural Geographic.
Okay.
And it's exciting because, like, you thought it was going to be an Attenborough type thing.
Yeah.
And it's totally not. And I just have no idea what they're going to do next
week. It feels like every week's going to be a mini movie. So next week, it's all about, I think the episode might be called Impact or something like that. And it's all about what happens when something smashes into us.
Oh, so like the highs and lows of the...
I think it's going to, if I was to guess, it probably covers off the asteroid that hit us, or the meteorite that hit us that killed the dinosaurs, through to how waves erode beaches and create the sediment at the bottom of the ocean and this sort of stuff.
I'm interested.
And impacts of plates.
Yeah.
The tectonic plates.
The tectonic plates.
I don't know how that came out of my brain. I was pretty impressed right there.
You had a good science teacher.
Their name was...
But there's not too many shows that the both of us get very excited about. There's normally one of us that's more excited than the other.
Yeah.
But this finished, we both looked at each other and went, that was awesome.
Again, I think it's because it's the perfect bridge for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Between fact and...
And a good story.
And a good story, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Just really quickly, I remembered that there was an announcement. SBS released a little announcement saying that Handmaid's Tale is coming out.
Oh, I saw that. It's next month, isn't it?
Yeah, season two. So April, we'll be looking forward to that. Did you watch it, Lynn? It's still there on SBS On Demand if you wanted to.
Sure.
It's free. So.
Yeah, right.
Why would you not? I watched an interesting doco. I watched two episodes. It's a six-parter. It's on Netflix called Wild, Wild Country. And it follows a utopian religious community back in the 80s in Oregon. And it was led by Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. You would recognize his face when you saw him.
Okay.
I didn't know this story, but he sort of blew up in India. He's super popular. People from the Western societies and countries went over and joined him. He was sort of pretty much their cult leader. He was the guy that had them wear red or sort of orange all the time. Okay. Anyway, they decided that they would move their whole clan to Oregon. I don't know how close to Portland. I don't think it was very close. Really, really rural. Bought a huge, we would probably call it a cattle station sort of station over there, and decided they were going to build their utopia.
Okay. I'm just imagining like a Bollywood.
No, it's nowhere near as exciting as that, but it's got. I've got a little link coming up to something else soon. But the locals weren't fans. Because the locals were a group of, I think it was about 50 or 60 farms and super, super rural little diner.
That's a local town for local people.
It was a local town for local people. They were retired folk, a lot of them, Christians.
Sure.
And they did not like what was going on and who was coming in. And it's told in a really interesting way in that they conduct the interviews with key figures in the drama. So you've got that side and that side, both sides. And there's no judgment in the way that they deliver it to you. So you'll be listening to the people from the – it's not a cult. They want you to know it's not a cult or wasn't. And you go, yeah.
That's what cults say.
Exactly. And you go, yeah, that sounds fair enough, what they're saying. Yeah, they were just there just to build a society for themselves. And then they'll cross over to the locals and what the locals say about them. They were trying to take over. They bought the diner, changed the whole thing there. We didn't feel welcome in our own town. You go, oh, yeah, I can see how that would. And I'm only two episodes in. They're quite long. They're well over an hour each. But as this drama unfolds, I assume something happened and the whole thing was dissolved because I don't know of a place like that in America. So I'm intrigued to know what happened. I'm sure some people know about it or remember it from back in the day, but late 70s, early 80s, I don't know.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
Very well. It's very well told.
So a cult in an American town. Why has that got you excited?
Because... Far Cry 5 is what everybody's talking about in the gaming world at the moment. And I just, as soon as I saw and the synopsis for Wild Wild Country on Netflix, I went, I watch this, see how closely it ties in with what Far Cry 5 are doing. Now, Far Cry, well, there's five of them. Actually, I think there's six because they had Primal. Far Cry
Primal's
Primal.
Technically 4.5.
Okay, so it's kind of like
so in the same way Blood Dragon is 3.5.
Okay, but this time it is set in America. Yes. Usually Far Cry games, Linz, are set elsewhere, so a tropical island somewhere in the Pacific.
I think I saw Tom playing one in Peru.
Yes.
Okay, good. I know something.
Yes. That was four. And this is set in America, and I know when they released it, there was a bit of talk, obviously coming from America, going, this isn't going to work. I don't know how I feel about this. And it's a religious cult taking over a town and an area somewhere. I don't know where in America.
It's meant to be Montana.
We'll say Montana.
Okay.
Fossil country.
Where do the goats come in?
Sorry, just for some context there. I played Far Cry 3 to death, And the day Far Cry 4 came out, I excitedly told Lynn, yes, Far Cry 4 is out. And Lynn said to me, oh, is that the game where you hunt goats? I said, it's not just about hunting goats. And I put the disc in, and the first thing I had to do was kill 12 goats. So it's forever referred to as the goat game.
Fair enough. They should change it if they ever get sick of their original titles.
Little rebrand.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't played any of it, but I've watched a couple of streamers, and it's very Far Cry-ish. But I did see a bit of a plane. You can fly planes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's exactly what I was hoping for.
Flybys in crop dusters and whatnot. This is the first time that you can have NPCs play along with you.
Oh.
Non-player characters. So you can enlist them to help you. One of them, I believe, is a sniper. One of them is an information person at the diner. One of them is a crop duster. And another one is a dog.
Yes.
And I think
you get the dog early.
I like the idea of the dog because the dog won't talk.
Yeah, there's a fair bit of two-way chatty-chatty. Where you're halfway through a mission and whoever you're doing the mission for will go, yee-haw, I can't believe what's going on, that kind of thing.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So this one you're playing the sheriff, new sheriff in town, and there's a scary cult leader who believes he's blessed by God to take over and bring about the apocalypse.
In a super violent way.
Yes, and his brothers are the lieutenants, and it has a different progress system to normal, whereas normally you have to, you know, kill a certain amount of creatures so you can skin them to create an object that will give you the leg up in the next round you need. Mm-hmm. There's actually progress by region.
Oh, okay.
So you can do the things you want. You don't have to climb every radio tower. You can do the things that you want to progress you further.
Nice. I never minded climbing those radio
towers,
stuff. Though.
They're a similar engine to Assassin's Creed.
Of course. Mm. Assassin's Creed, you do that. Mm. Climb something really tall and then look at it, then jump off.
While an eagle goes, ha!
So Far Cry 5, I would imagine this time next week you'll have a lot more to say about it.
Potentially. We'll see. We'll see how much watching I've got to do.
Oh, so much watching.
Yeah.
What else did you watch?
Hey, I watched a show called Unlocked, The World of Games Revealed.
Ooh.
I know. Isn't that a boom, boom, boom title? Look, it's an 8-part.
So what are they revealing?
Everything you could ever imagine.
Binary code.
This is video games, hey?
Yes.
Not Cluedo or...
That's look, I'd happily watch a show about the history of board games.
Me too.
Yeah.
We're really happy.
No, look, it's executive produced and hosted in part by Sean Astin, who we've talked plenty about before from The Goonies and Lord of the Rings.
Hey, monkey.
And
John Astin's son.
Yes, and for a deeper cut, 50 First Dates, because some people enjoy him in that.
Who's John Astin?
Gomez.
Da-na-na-na.
Oh,
OG
I did know
Gomez,
that.
Not,
I think it's his
not Raul Gulia.
Stepfather.
Don't know, actually.
Oh, it's worth a Wikipedia.
He's
late at night one night.
They're in that mix. But it's a show that he's put together. And I think it might actually be from tail end 2016 or something like that, but it's only just come in front of me. And he enlists other celebrities, and there's 3 or 4 segments per episode, to go and investigate different elements of gaming. Mm. So the section that he does is all about new gaming institutes or places where you can go and learn how to be a coder or game designer and this sort of stuff. They have Zelda Williams, who's Robin Williams' daughter, and she goes to the LA hospital to learn about how Starlight Foundation is working with gaming companies to supply gaming consoles for sick children, and not just in the way of giving them something to do, but these kids that are locked in isolation wards for 8 to 12 months at a time, giving them platforms so they can do multiplayer games and play with the other kids in the hospital, their friends at school, like just keep a connection to
giving
the outside
world. Giving them an outside world,
Because there's all these studies that have been done to show that distraction actually greatly reduces pain, quite often more than medication can in some ways. Like, it will work in concert with medication, but distracting the brain allows the body to rehabilitate.
And also, if they're playing games, their brains are engaged as well. I mean, it's far more than, the passive activity of watching something, a movie or a TV show.
Yeah, so some of the games, some of the kids have PlayStations or Xboxes, but a lot of them have the original Wii.
Oh, yeah.
So they've got the motion control going and this sort of stuff. And then the third segment, which is going to be a nice segue.
Yes.
Is hosted by our old friend Merle Dixon himself.
Merle.
Michael Rooker from Walking Dead, also of Guardians of the Galaxy as Yondu, the blue alien. And he does a large segment about motion capture for video games.
He was part of a black ops.
Yes, yes, he did a Call of Duty one where, you know, gun-toting hillbilly fighting back against the zombie horde.
Jeez.
Typecast much.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was really blown away by this show. Again, it's a 45-minute episode one. I've got three more episodes lined up to go.
What was it called again? I want to watch this.
Unlocked. Okay. The World of Games Revealed.
Whoa. Is it spelt normal or yes. is it like funky? I
don't know. No, there's no leet speak.
Love a normal spelling.
But hey, I think that might just lead us into
yes.
that show we watch.
Spoiler alert. In 3, 2, 1. You have been warned.
Jeez, I don't even know what episode we're up to with that. We're getting close to the end of this season, though.
Fingers crossed.
This episode, I was underwhelmed.
Look, the first half was pretty strong.
Yeah, but then the second half, when I remembered what the whole Negan plan was, I went, oh, yeah.
And the super zombies that were suddenly ninjas.
Yeah, ninja zombies.
No one knew how to scream or wake up.
Yeah, why were they all asleep during that?
Why was no one watching? Why did no one have a light on? Why? I had a lot of questions as to why.
So many questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the minute Carol's, what would you call him?
Tobin.
Yeah, but to her ex?
The second base scorer?
Yeah.
We didn't see it get further.
I mean, he's literally been an extra in every scene he's been in.
For about 4 years.
He's not had a word to say. He's not been given a word to say. Suddenly,
yeah, his
he's
job's
speaking
been like,
again.
His job's been like concerned builder in background or man carrying beam and things like that. All of a sudden, he got to have a chat with her. Oh, if I knew getting stabbed would get you to come and talk to me, I would have done it a lot sooner. Like this sort of stuff. So as soon as he started talking, you were like, oh, you're dying.
Yeah. That's the end of you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yep. And unfortunately, he was like a 6'8" man mountain. Mm-hmm. And just decimated through others. So they were all locked in at night.
Having a sleepover.
Yes.
Okay.
And all of a sudden there were very ninja-like zombies able to sneak up on people and no, you know, even people not being bitten in the jugular weren't screaming out.
Oh.
It's also very interesting to meet and then lose Dana in one episode, who was that nurse woman-ish,
yeah,
I guess.
Hi, I'm Dana. What do you think you're doing? Put those sheets and towels over there.
I've
I'm
got
gonna
an
die
attitude.
Now. Yeah, and these are methods that The Walking Dead have used before so many times now that as soon as you even
formulaic.
Get, yeah, you just get a whiff of it, you go, oh, I know what's going to happen, which is a shame because originally it was quite exciting. Go, oh no,
sure.
People have got the flu in the prison.
Did they ever attempt to mix it up and like do something like you thought it was going there, but no?
They amputated one guy's arm and you thought maybe they'd have stopped the virus in time, but he'd had the virus for a few hours at that point.
Too late.
Oh. Yeah.
Too late.
Oh, right. The saviors have been dipping their weapons in zombie guts. So
and then slashing and stabbing
yes,
people.
It will speed up the infection a great deal.
Tom's already told me that if I get bitten, then he's going to kill me straight away.
Yep. There's no coming back.
No.
I'm sorry.
It's the nicest
no
thing to
thought,
do.
No thought.
No. Look, it's safety at that point.
And the longer we draw it out, the tougher it'll be. And
I'm happy. I'm happy with the immediate response.
Mm. And at least you know. It's not
We've
sort of
had
a shock.
The conversation. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it'd be awkward. It'd be awkward, though, if it just turned out you had a cough.
She's been eating popcorn. There's a little bit of a husk in there. Quick, lend me your knife.
You know I love Dwight, so I'm glad to see that he is still clearly on team good guys.
Yes.
That was a very clever tactic. Taking Tara out before Simon could get her properly.
That was good.
I also think it's hilarious that they've been foreshadowing for weeks that, oh, you say there's one really good-looking saviour and he's kind of nice and he decided to stick around and help. Do you think he could be Maggie's new love interest?
What? Why are you suggesting that?
Do you think maybe that's what will happen after the time flash forward if they work out Lauren Cohen's contract and she sticks around?
Do you think if she doesn't stick around, he could play her? His hair is similar.
Oh, he does have some nice
he's
locks.
He's got nice hair. Mm. He's got Really nice hair.
Mm. Yeah. And Henry, is he captured by the saviors? Is he trailing them, or is he just dead in a ditch?
I don't think he's dead in a ditch because he has to learn his lesson properly.
Yeah. 11-year-old kid, unlock the door.
Oh, so, look, you said Henry, and I was like, Henry sounds like someone who's going to die. But then you said he was 11, and it's like, oh, well, that squashes that.
I mean, 11-year-olds have died in the past in that show. But
fun fact, he's the younger brother of the girl that played Sophia in seasons 1 and 2.
IRL?
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
I like that.
Yeah.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
I got one last show.
Yeah.
If we can, before we go into the quiz, just because it's AMC themed and it actually debuted Stealth on Sunday night after Walking Dead.
Please explain what Stealth is about.
The Terror. I've mentioned this before, this new show on the AMC, and I watched the first episode last night. I've got the second episode ready to go, and I'm dying to dive into this. So this is the story of two ships trying to circumnavigate the Arctic in about an 1840s, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
Really high-budget historical drama. We've seen plenty of those.
We like them.
We do. This thing just starts with existential dread and gets worse.
Okay.
Nothing but bad decisions and hubris made, and by the end of the first episode, they are firmly encased in ice and they are not travelling any further for months.
Ooh.
There's also potentially something strange, supernatural happening.
Under the water or just in the environment?
Both.
Ooh.
Both. So there's only one character that has a scuba-ish suit, like an old school, you know.
Oh, yeah. Bell. I remember Tintin having one of those.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's the proper bell diving thing, and he has to be lowered down by rope and, you know, one pull for give me air, two pulls for pull me up. This sort of stuff. And he goes under the water when some ice is wedged into one of the propellers and he sees some shit.
And do you see it as the...
You see a hint and we know what it is, mm-hmm. but what it's doing doesn't make sense.
Okay.
So there's a bit of that, and then there's people dying of infection, and one of them sees something before he dies and is holding onto the doctor's hand, and another doctor's like, well, clearly it was a hallucination. And he's like, no, his eyes were clear. He was seeing something in the room. There was something there.
This is the kind of show that I will have to watch during the day.
Well, these two boats, no one knew what happened, but one of them was found in 2014 and the other was found in 2016, and along with them, potentially cannibalized corpses. So this show is going to go some dark places, and it's got a lot of the cast of Game of Thrones that have died already.
So they're used to it.
Yeah.
They're really good. It's in their resume, know how to die.
Oh, it's got people from Mad Men and...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Game of Thrones and some of the guys, one of the commanders that was in Rogue One and this and stuff. So a lot of people that you've known and seen in things.
Mm.
And a lot of guys that have popped up in great British dramas and stuff like that in smaller roles. But, yeah, it's...
Would you watch it, Linz?
So, maybe. I Wikipedia'd it last night, the real life thing that went on. And the main guy, Captain, would you call him? Sure.
Yeah.
he's revered as a hero in his hometown and stuff like that. But there's a lot of criticism about him as well, you know, what with cannibalism going on and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah, tends to cast a shadow.
So it'll be interesting to see where the show will go to depict him as, is he a hero or is he an anti-hero?
The bit that I'm loving so far is that none of these people are particularly heroic. The one person that we think is maybe potentially the hero is a drunk and is clearly drinking to try and bury some unresolved trauma in the past.
Yeah,
that guy you're talking about is played by Cyrian Hines, who was Mance Rayder on Game of Thrones, the King of the Wildlings and this sort of stuff. You get weird flashbacks to his past of him being treated as a hero at an opera, the entire opera standing to applaud him and this sort of stuff. And it's already questioning the idea of heroics around him because he's making a lot of calls fueled by hubris that are going to damage lives. But at the same time, we get enough behind the scenes with him that we realize that he's putting on this face to do so. He wants to maintain optimism and, you know, stoicism.
Yeah.
We're grand British gentlemen and we are going to save this, you know, we're going to find this route for Queen and Country and save... each other's lives and this sort of stuff. So it's
It's got you.
I can't remember the last time I had a show leave me with this much tension.
Wow.
Like I sat there the whole way through. The other part, the sound design on the show is amazing. For the first 45 minutes of the episode, a lot of the only sound going on is the creaking of the
wood boat.
And the sloshing in the water. And there's just a point where all the sound stops, and that's when the ice freeze happens. Ooh. And it's like everyone grinds to a halt. People have woken up, and that's when the show really kicks in of the dread. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm really amped for this show.
I want to watch
and
this.
It's paired up with Walking Dead at the moment, and I think it will continue on with Fear the Walking Dead, which comes back in 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, which indicates how many more episodes we got of The Walking Dead.
That's right. I saw a good trailer for that one.
Yes, I've seen
one
too.
New people involved.
Yeah, it actually looks pretty good.
Garrett Dillahunt. And is it Jenna Elfman? Is that who I spied in there?
As in Dharma?
Yeah.
Dharma, that's who it is, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bing, little light bulb went off in my head then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they got, and Morgan will be there at some point. So
he'll show up.
I'm on board. It looks like they're in an abandoned amusement park, which is
so perfect for a zombie apocalypse.
Well, Zombieland did it well already, but mm-hmm. I have a feeling these guys will find some other tricks.
You would hope so.
Yeah. There's a lot to do at the fair.
Now we have a listener, not suggestion, we have a listener quiz.
Ooh.
That is so cool.
I know. This is from Gary, and it's so left field. I never would have picked this one, so thank you, Gary, for this. The title is Italian Composer or Name of Pasta?
Oh.
Sounds a bit Billy on the Street, doesn't it?
Very gnocchi. That's potatoes, not pasta.
Spaghetti. No, that's not the first one.
Sure.
The first one is Pizzetti. I'm going to try and do my best Italian accent. Pizzetti.
I'm going pasta.
I'll say pasta.
Composer.
Oh.
Born in 1888.
Mm. Oh, so they're just Italian composers. They're not film composers.
No. They're just Italian composers.
Okay.
You'll understand.
He didn't know the rules properly, so let's disregard the first one.
I'm not asking for that. I'm big on my parameters.
Testaroli.
Pasta.
Composer.
It's pasta. Mm. It's rectangular shape. I've never seen it before, but it's apparently the earliest recorded type of pasta in Italy.
Have you got spirals in there? Or bow ties?
Spaghetti. Fettuccine. Well, here's one starting with F. Fusilli.
Composer.
Pasta.
It's the spiral pasta, Linz.
Oh, is it?
That's the name of it. Yes.
Is that a well-known fact as well?
I didn't know it.
Oh, you didn't know?
I'm sure if you said it to an Italian, they go, come on. What do you mean you didn't know? Come on. Gemello.
Composer.
Composer.
It's a pasta.
Oh.
Yeah, it's sort of half a finger long and it sort of curls into itself. You'd know it if you saw it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Google it.
I think this game is like tossing coins.
It's literally just guessing. Pacini with a P. Pacini.
Was that the first one?
No, the first one was Pizzetti.
Oh, okay.
This one is Pacini.
Okay. I'm going to go pasta.
I'm going to go composer.
It's a composer. Giovanni Pacini. Not a film composer because he was born in 1796.
Whoa, old school.
Old school. All right, let's do one more. Last one. I've not been keeping score, but I feel like we probably shouldn't have.
I think Gary won.
I think Gary's the real winner. Cavalli.
Composer.
Pasta.
I reckon it's a composer name, and it is. It's Francesco Cavalli, born in 1602. He was heavily into hip hop.
Wasn't there a guy named Ennio Morricone or something? I can't remember. The guy who
invented the radio, Marconi?
No, I'm thinking of the guy that did all the spaghetti western musicals.
Ooh.
And Tarantino gets him to do a lot of his films these days.
Did he do Django Unchained?
He did.
That
I could be wrong. He
western
might not
sound.
Be Italian.
Well, look, let us know if you know these things. You know all the different ways to get in contact with us because the bloke said it throughout the podcast. And I think that wraps it up with a bow tie. Thank you, Gary. If you've got any watching suggestions or even some quizzes, we definitely want them.
Hell yeah.
Free content. Yeah. Thank you very much. Lynns, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
We'll definitely have you back.
Oh, thanks. And Tom? Fun.
Hey, it's a thank you.